hello and welcome. On this shorter version of our special stage podcast, we're getting to know Daniel Gonzalez, the guest on our special stage podcast this week. So if you haven't done so already, have a listen to Daniel chat about the Western Australian Rally Championship this weekend and what he's planning up for next year. He said he isn't looking too far ahead into the future, but he's loving his rallying nonetheless. And we're going to learn a bit more about him now before we get too much further. Are you ready for it, Daniel? Are you ready to sort of open up a little bit more about who this new person to rallying is over the past 18 months?
Cool.
What is your first rallying memory? If those people have listened to the podcast or the longer version of the podcast said no, that it's something to do with a great Group N driver of the past.
Yeah, so I always share with everyone that I was born in Oz and a very proud Australian, but I was also very, very lucky and grateful to have been raised in Uruguay in South America, where my parents are from. So I'm completely bilingual. Mm-hmm. And having arrived in Uruguay when I was 5 or 6 years old, everything on TV and the billboards and the media, they were all over Gustavo Dreyes, which was our four-time world champion Group N driver. So obviously that was our introduction. Our initial introduction to actual rallying was there. And then, of course, when we were watching his events, we were able to watch Colin McRae and Carlos Sainz. Carlos Sainz was huge in Uruguay as well. So obviously being that Uruguay is from Spanish descent, there's also there was a very strong following there as well. So we were very lucky to have grown up watching that. And rallying in Uruguay and South America is actually huge. Of course, inaccessible for most of us.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely huge, and the media covers it tremendously over there.
And was your first rally in Australia?
Yeah.
That was where you were competing first of all?
Yeah, the very, very first rally I was introduced to was 2 years ago, which was Collie Experts Cup, which is coincidentally the last round of the year for us now. So 2 years ago, our very, very first rally in an old 911 SC with Tim Mills from the KTEC family as a navigator. And then Gonzalez with a very busy steering wheel. That was the very first rally that we were fortunate to have been involved with after having done the Targa West event on tarmac. We got into having our very first taste of gravel. And, of course, after that, the rest is history. We were absolutely hooked. The intensity, everything is turned up onto 11, but also the part where the chemistry with your navigator and the writing of the notes, the understanding. A big journey for us has been understanding and learning how to write the notes.
Yeah, talking about pace notes, how do you like them called to you? Do you do a 1-6 system, 1-7, 1-10? Can you explain a bit about that?
I'll give you the rookie answer.
Okay.
Generally, I don't mind how they call as long as it's in time.
Of course.
Coming out on time. I don't know where I'm going to go and what I need to do. But we do use a bit of a hybrid system where our we generally just have a it's in essence it's a 1-10 with a bit of an adjustment where it's just a flat left, flat right, and then we have a 9-8 all the way down and to generally 3, and then we just go hairpin or but generally 3-9 and then for anything under that it's generally just a hairpin.
And is there any unique calls that might be in your notes? I know there's quite a few weird ones that you look across the world championship and even some of the national championship. There's some really odd calls, but do you get Damon to call anything different?
We've obviously benefited a lot from Damo's experience and the work that he's done with us in going out and doing recce practice. You know, we spent early this year in going out there and actually practicing together, which I think put us in a really good position earlier in the year. But a lot of the information and the note calling that we use comes from, obviously the influence of having Alistair on board, the influence of having Glenn as well, and also Harry, who's been incredible with us as well. So a lot of the calling and, you take a little bit from everyone and then you find them. You use them in your notes as well. But I don't think there's anything The one that's probably a bit random and weird is Thread the Needle.
That works. That's pretty good. Well, it's clear, isn't it?
Thread the Needle. So if you have one that's probably one that is quite unique to us, and it's definitely a Nicole-y special where you've had those over the last few rallies, you've had some really fast sections and you just got to nail it straight through the middle. Yeah. Otherwise, you're in deep trouble. So the Thread the Needle's probably our one.
Very good. You've got a couple of nice rally cars in the shed, the Skoda and obviously the Hyundai. Is there a favourite rally car of all time or a rally car that you'd love to get behind the wheel of?
Mate, I absolutely, and again, it's probably, having grown up watching this car on TV so much, it was the Ford Escort RS Cosworth.
Right,
93. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, 7-speed gearbox, I believe.
Yeah, so Francis Delacour was famous for that one. Of course, there's heaps of other drivers that were in that one as well. But that's a car that I like as a rally car. I'm just in awe of its looks as a tarmac spec car. Mm-hmm. But even as a normal road car, remember they released a model back then where it was just a super lightweight model. It was one of the first ones that, now obviously the whole RS thing in the world is quite a marketing thing that all the manufacturers seem to be doing. But back then, Ford Escort RS Cosworth was one of the very, very, very first that actually introduced the road car that was a rally car, pretty much get it onto the gravel and compete in it.
Fantastic. Is there a bucket list rally that you'd like to compete on? Maybe it's going back to Uruguay and doing an event in their national championship. That would be a big tick.
That would be amazing. I think having grown up in Uruguay, I was a sprinter there, so I did represent Uruguay as a runner around South America.
Yeah.
Hence why we ended up in Oz on a scholarship, and why we came back to Australia was because I was on a sprint scholarship. But having represented Uruguay in athletics down there, being able to do a rally in South America would just be incredible, and something that even with my incredible imagination, I would have never thought possible.
Yeah. Tell me about the sprinting career. Was it short-lived or was it longer than?
No, it was my life. So from the age of 11, I remember we were at school and the PE teacher was getting us to do drills, and you had to go from point A to point B, say it was, 40 meters from point A to B and run back. Mm-hmm. And I got point A, B, and then you had to come back. And by the time I got back, I beat everyone by almost the distance. They were at B and I was already back. And the teacher was scratching his head going, what have I just witnessed? And I remember straight after that class, he took me to the national team and to the athletics track and introduced me to who became my coach from the age of 11 to the age of 16, when, 16, 17, when we remigrated and left Uruguay. So I spent all of my life being an elite athlete, where my whole, training 4 hours a day and competing on weekends was my life. And I loved it. And I thought that's, that was the norm for me. And it wasn't until I came to Australia and I still did compete that 2 years after I arrived, and then all of a sudden, fell into the real world. But my life growing up in Uruguay was just all athletics, 4 hours a day, no partying, no drinking, going to bed early, getting up early, going to school and then finishing school and training for 4 hours every night.
Yeah. I think that's where you would get your obsessive, I guess, attitude towards rallying. You love it. Like, you get right into it and you don't do anything by halves. So that's the way to do it.
I don't know any other way, as that's how I've grown up. So I've always gone, I put everything into it, and I've always had a mentor there in the background, a coach, if you will. And I've always had a team, had a group. And I think that's been the most important thing for me personally, is that longingness to have a group is so critical for me, because that's in my DNA, belonging and having a group that you're a part of. You win together, you lose together, but ultimately that's your group, that's your tribe. So, that's something that's just in my DNA.
Winning and Losing Together, it's a nice segue to Tijuana Cartel, the band that you were a part of for a number of years. How does an aspiring sprinter get into a band? Was it the next passion on the list for Daniel Gonzalez?
So what happened was when I stopped running, that was absolutely devastating for me. Because you can imagine as an elite athlete, you grow up and all you think about is the Olympics and all you think about is your identity is being an elite athlete, and that's who you are. You do 100 and 200 meters, and you run 10 eights, 10 sevens, and you break records, and that's just who you are, right? And then ultimately, through injuries, I wasn't able to continue with my athletic career, and that was really, really traumatic. Mm-hmm. And when all of that happened, all of a sudden, just finished year 12. The injuries started, so I lost myself in working. So I was always doing three, four jobs, and I was just started to buy property at a very early age, which was at that period where I bought my first property. I was 18 years old, and then as well, imagine as a young, you're still a teenager, really. You're not even a young adult yet.
Yeah,
my whole identity. Trying to see where I fit in, it was really, really difficult. And I lost myself in music. All of a sudden, I played drums, and I lost myself into music, which then, of course, with my DNA makeup, it was right. I play drums and I study, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. And now I have I started playing in clubs. And then from playing in clubs, playing percussion with different international DJs that were coming through, there was this group in the club that had a different residency night. So the manager put us together and we started jamming out, and then I joined the group, and then, we started to play bigger venues. We had a manager that looked after us full-time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The manager then decided that he was firing himself and retiring because he couldn't manage these animals that were partying every night.
Yeah.
So at that time, I inherited that position. So I was obviously working the club scene, and then I also did have a very secure day job working for the government. So I was ultimately working around the clock every day.
Right.
And when I inherited that position of managing the band, then it was my responsibility to make it produce. So I had to sell it to clubs. I had to sell it to festivals. I then had to put on shows in different states. So we were constantly touring for 15 years. So going from town to town, I'd hire the support acts. So all of it, the logistics, the sound gear, all of that stuff. So it was an incredible time of our lives. We got to do a lot of traveling, got to see places we, ultimately, as we do with rallying, would otherwise have never seen, but had the most incredible life doing that up until it was time to just change lifestyle. And then, of course, the only other thing I understood intimately was buying and selling houses of my own, which I used to do that as well. So then, of course, when it came time to say, well, what else am I going to do other than music? The only natural progression was to get into the real estate world, representing clients. And we, of course, the same, the DNA coming out again.
Yeah.
We embarked on that journey incredibly obsessively and with a lot of gathering know-how and understanding, and we made that very successful as well. And in the last 10 years, having done that, we've performed the last 8 years out of that 10, we've always been in the top 1, 2, or 3 ranked highest in the state. So that's also a bit of a competition as well that is in us, and we just love to compete ultimately and do the best we can.
The high performance nature of the sprinting stuff and the managerial stuff of the band, and obviously the work stuff now with the real estate. What goes into the rallying? Is there sort of parts that you take from each that then you can apply to rallying and think, right, oh yeah, I know this, or I can understand this, or this can make me drive faster or be a better driver in general?
Yeah, I like to approach everything with as much preparation as I can. That's how I've always done everything from the age of 11. So for me, it was, when we got into driving, it was like, okay, well, where, you know, what do we need to do? Who can help us? Who can coach us? Mm-hmm. What Inca can I see? What stages were run before? Which, you know, what did it look like? What did it sound like? So I generally like to arrive at a place or anything that I'm doing as prepared as I possibly can, because it just gives me that peace of mind that I can actually then relax to a degree and enjoy the moment rather than be freaking out. And, you know, it's not for everybody. Everyone has their own makeup with regards to how they approach things best. For me, I relax this way. I find I need to show up over-prepared, if you will, to a degree, to enjoy the moment as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, fantastic. Daniel, thanks again for your time. It's been good to chat on our Special Stage podcast and learn a bit more about you and obviously the rallying experience that you've had so far, and hopefully the many more rallies that you'll be able to do in the years to come. So thanks again for your time.
Great work. Appreciate it. Thank you.